The championship game is tonight. It doesn't matter if your bracket's already busted. There is still a way for you to cash in on March Madness at MyBookie. If you have not signed up yet, it's not too late. It doesn't matter if you've been a player for years or you just want to get in on tonight's championship game. Lay down some money, score big on college hoops. Join thousands of online players and start betting right now at MyBookie.ag. Listen, are you sick and tired of getting the runaround when you ask for a payout? Then join MyBookie right now. They pay fast without any hassle whatsoever. You're wasting your time betting anyplace else. They even have in-game live betting so you can place a bet even after tip-off. So join right now. Join right now and MyBookie will match your first deposit with a 50% bonus. Just use the promo code JUNGLE to activate that offer. The championship game is tonight. Visit MyBookie.ag today before they tip. Play, win, and get paid at MyBookie.ag.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
The road to the Final Four has now reached a conclusion. From the field of 68, we are now down to two, Michigan and Villanova. Now, before I get into tonight's game, let me go back to Saturday night. More specifically, what Villanova did Saturday night, because to just gloss over that and get to a title game preview, to me, would be a mistake. Because it wasn't that Villanova beat a Kansas team that had lost only once since February 10th. It's that they beat them in less than 7 minutes. When Colin Gillespie hit a three with 13:04 left in the first half, it was 22-4. The game was over. Six threes in the first 7 minutes. A Final Four record 18 for the game. Thanks for coming.
Brunson will leave it in the corner. A three for Eric Paschal is good. Booth with a ball fake, drives baseline, skips it out of the left wing to Bridges. He'll fire from there and hits the three. Skip into the corner. Gillespie will try a three for Villanova, and it's good. Colin Gillespie with a three.
Wow.
Villanova has to launch a deep three, and it's good. The three for Eric Paschal. Booth driving from the right-hand wing. The skip to Paschal in the left corner. He'll try the three, and he'll hit. Eric Paschal with another three. Here's DiVincenzo on the left wing with eight to shoot. Launching a three. That's good. DiVincenzo with the 18th made three for Villanova.
Credit Westwood One. The amazing thing to me about Villanova is I'm not sure how you stop these guys. I'm not even sure how you slow these guys. But the amazing thing is it's not like they run a bunch of lottery picks at you. They'll just carve you with passes and then bury you with the threes. And it's not like you can only focus on one guy, because virtually every single one of them can shoot it. Six guys in double digits. Jalen Brunson, 18. Omari Spellman, 15. Eric Paschal went 10 for 11, 24 points. 10 for 11. 10 for 11 in a Final Four game gets you mentioned alongside Bill Walton for all-time great games in Final Four history. I mean, these dudes are clinical. They're surgical. They're precise. They're merciless. I mean, call it what you like. They took apart a really good Kansas team and didn't let them make a sound. And I'm not sure who was in more of a daze at the end of that game, Bill Self or Jay Wright. Self could not believe what he had just seen.
That's as good a team as we played against and that I can remember. We didn't play very well, obviously. And when we got spread out and our game plan went to crap on how we were going to guard certain actions, and we got caught in between, and that's the worst thing you can do.
That's a Hall of Fame coach talking right there. A Hall of Fame coach, one of the best ever to do it, and this guy's shaking his damn head saying, our game plan went to crap. Quote, our game plan went to crap. And then Jay Wright, when asked about it, I mean, Jay Wright was practically apologetic.
That was just one of those nights.
Yeah, I'd say it was one of those nights. Except they have nights like that way more often than most others. And it's demoralizing as hell for opponents. Because you know that run is coming. You know that Villanova is going to make that run. And when it does come, there's pretty much nothing you can do about it. You know, that run where they get a couple of stops, they make a few passes, they hit a few open threes, and suddenly they're up double digits before anybody knows what hit them. As one anonymous Big East coach told ESPN when asked about facing Jay Wright's crew, quote, I thought we played our balls off. You look up at that score and it's like, what? We're playing as hard as we can, so it's just deflating. You feel like you're there and it's like, damn, they don't miss, end quote. It's true. They don't miss, not very often. And then that gets in your head. Then every time down the court, you're afraid that if you don't score, it's going to trigger one of Villanova's runs. And then you're playing two teams, the Villanova who's in front of you on the court and the Villanova who's in your dome. And when that happens, it's over. I mean, let me tell you about Saturday night. Saturday night was such a clinic that you've got people like Dick Vitale suggesting that they move the three-point line back and that you widen the lane. I love Dickie V. Love Dickie V. But why don't we just slow down a little bit? I mean, that was an amazing night, no doubt. But I don't think we need to be changing the rules of basketball just yet. Nova makes it look easy, but it's not. They didn't just show up in San Antonio and start hitting shots. This is the result of years of work and developing a system. If it was as easy as they make it look, then everybody would be doing it. Besides, if sharing the rock, hitting threes, and playing good defense is killing basketball, then we live in a really weird world. Let's not forget, it was not that long ago that everybody was complaining that college players couldn't even shoot. But this Nova team can. Man, they shoot the hell out of it. All of which is to say, Michigan is in deep tonight. Very, very deep. And if Nova shoots the way they shot on Saturday, you can cancel this game at the 10-minute mark and start rolling one shining moment at halftime. Now, there's one issue here. They don't always shoot it like that. So if you're Michigan, and especially the way Michigan plays defense, you've got to hope that they have one of those off nights. One of those nights like they had against Texas Tech when Tech held them to 4 of 24 from beyond the arc. Yeah, that's fine. That's good. One problem. They got hammered anyway. 4 of 24 from beyond the arc, and Villanova still wins by double digits. Let me just say one thing in defense of Michigan, and I think they are in deep. I think they're in really deep tonight. But before we hand Jay Wright his second trophy in 3 years, before we redraw the lines on the court and move the three-point shot back, before we blame Villanova for ruining the sport, let's actually play the game first, because John Beilein is an absolute wizard. He's got his team playing at the top of their game, at the top of their belief. And if anybody can give them a chance in this game, it's Beilein. It's just going to be really, really tough. He needs to come up with one of the best game plans ever, because as Bill Self said himself, he had one and it, quote, went to crap.
Went to crap.
It went to crap.
Went to crap.
Villanova's got a way of doing that to you, though, right? Villanova's got a way of taking even the best laid plans and turning them to crap.
Went to crap.
Villanova's got a way of doing that to you. Villanova's the better team. Better team doesn't always win. Sometimes the hotter team wins, and nobody's hotter than Michigan. But Villanova's the better team. They just are. They've been the best team in the nation for most of the season. If it were anybody other than Michigan, I would ask, why are we wasting our time? And let's just give the Cats their trophy right now. But there's something about that Michigan squad. There generally is under Beilein this time of year. Something about a team that lost to Northwestern in February, but hasn't lost since. I can't take Michigan here, but I could see where you might. I could see where you might. Matt Norlander is my guest. Matt, good morning. Good to have you back. How are you?
Jim Rome, it's wonderful to be with you. San Antonio is gorgeous. Very much looking forward to what I hope can be a dramatic, close, fantastic wraps the 2017-2018 college basketball season.
You know, Matt, you and me both, let me ask you this. One game left in the tourney. How has that city of San Antonio been treating you as a Final Four host?
You know what? It's been great, and this is my first trip here. And if you haven't been to San Antonio, first of all, it's the seventh most populated city in America, which I had no idea. So it's bigger than people realize, but it's got a great intimacy with the Riverwalk and the downtown scene. And because you can walk to so much stuff, see, this is a big time thing, I think, with college basketball, college football, the pro sports. I know the Super Bowl is always one central location, so you can identify with this, Jim, but it's so critical to enhancing the experience for fan bases and media and everyone that comes to cover these things. If you can have things that are simply that are walkable and in warm weather, I honestly, New Orleans, San Antonio, and Indianapolis, the three classic walkable Final Four cities, that should be the rotation. I know all the NFL media wants it in what, LA, New Orleans, Miami each year. This is what we feel on the college hoop side. It's been fantastic, and I hope we don't wait a decade to come back here. San Antonio is a great town.
This Monday edition of the Daily Jungle Podcast is brought to you in part by Fan Exchange. Are you thinking about buying tickets to your favorite sporting events or concert or theater event? Maybe you want to experience a basketball game courtside rather than on your couch. How about banging on the glass at an NHL game instead of on your own TV in your own living room? Then head on over to fanexchange.com for a safe, easy, and reliable experience. Tickets purchased on Fan Exchange are always guaranteed. There's no getting to the gate and worrying about getting in. Whether it's tonight's championship game, March Madness, or Major League Baseball, WrestleMania, Coachella, or a Broadway musical, Fan Exchange gets you closer to the action. Find the very best seats at the best prices at fanexchange.com. Just use the promo code ROME. Promo code ROME will get you 50% off the service fees on your next purchase. Once again, Fan Exchange. We have tickets. Fan Exchange. Matt Norlander joining us. I've been to all the spots that you mentioned for those events, and you're so right. It's easy to get around. It makes sense. And that makes perfect sense to me, too. Now, Matt, Michigan was down double digits to Loyola in the second half. They battle all the way back. They win. So let me start right there. What did John Beilein's team show you and how they played in that second half, especially given the fact that two of their key guys did not have great games?
You know what? Mo Wagner was – he picked a great time to have the best game of his career, and he was critical. And it was a mismatch for Loyola. We knew that going in. But the defense was so critical, Jim. I mean, at one point, Loyola had five straight turnovers on consecutive possessions. That really flipped the game. And for the defense to step up the way that it did, and by the way, held Loyola Chicago to 10 three-point attempts, only made one of them. Michigan is extremely good at that. So as you watch the game tonight, and Villanova is this Voltron of offense. I mean, they're ridiculous. Obviously, now you got people calling them the Golden State Warriors of college basketball. And that's fair in a lot of respects. When you watch this game, see how frequently, one, Villanova gets what it wants from deep, or if Michigan can impede that. And if not, here's the thing. As we saw, Jim, with Boston, I was there. Texas Tech dirtied that game like up against Villanova, didn't let them get anything. They got four three-pointers on 20 attempts. Villanova does not need to shoot 35 times from three-point range in order to win. So while Michigan's scheme against Loyola was critical in sort of flipping that game in the second half and making that big run, that was big time. Michigan simply, you know, if you tell me right now that Villanova only takes 18 three-point shots tonight and they make five of them, I'm not going to tell you that means Michigan wins, because Villanova's too good outside in, and they've got a pair of really good bigs, Eric Paschal and Omari Spellman, versus Michigan's one really good big in Mo Wagner. So that's why it's going to be such a challenge for Michigan tonight.
Matt Norlander joining us. He's live in San Antonio. Hey, Matt, one more thought about Villanova. I mean, they make it look so easy when obviously it's not so easy. As you watch them, what are the key elements to the way they play that makes them so good?
This is almost, Jim, it's almost so simple to the point of being frustratingly trite, but they only run five or six sets. They're very free. They're guilt-free in how they distribute the ball and how they shoot it. And no one gets frustrated, any of the guys on the roster, any of the coaches, if they wind up taking a bad shot, which almost never happens. They have an unending confidence in how they can move the ball, shoot the ball, and keep going. And the stuff that they run is relatively simple, but you kind of can't stop it. It's really fascinating to see a team like that. And the biggest reason why that's possible is because they have so many veterans on the team. There are so many guys on this roster who were redshirts. So they've got one additional year of experience. So that's why at any point, like, I don't think we'll get to this point tonight, Jim, but let's say we've got about 10 minutes to go in the second half and Michigan is up 58-52 and they've looked good. You and I both know that Villanova is able to rip off 13-2 runs like they just got out of bed. It's fascinating to watch. They're so fun to watch. And overall, it's funny to me when we think about, Jim, heading into the 2016 tournament before Villanova won over North Carolina at the buzzer. The rep on Villanova was, yeah, they always get a top one, top two seed, but this team is a paper tiger. They're not worth anything. They're so overrated. The Big East is overrated. And now we're talking about them. Honestly, this five-year run they're on, they have a case as the best program in college basketball over the past half decade. It's amazing what one national championship and a push to a second will do for your reputation.
Matt Norlander joining us. Matt, stay right there. And to your point about the run, you know they're going to make a run. They're always going to make that run. Loyola looked like they were in control. And Michigan, and then they make a run. But my point about this is, when you look at Villanova, they win their second national championship in 3 years if they win tonight. We're talking about a guy who's won 30 games or more 4 years in a row in Jay Wright. I mean, what's that say about Jay Wright as a coach and the program that he has right now?
Well, one, he could be headed to the Hall of Fame no matter what. But you win 2 in 3 years, you become, I believe, one of only 8 coaches ever to do that, to get 2 titles in a 3-year span, and to do it with a National Player of the Year, which, by the way, it's happened, but that's not a common thing. You know, in the history of the NCAA tournament going back to 1939, we've only had, I think, about 10 or 11 instances where you've had the National Player of the Year also win the national championship. So it says something about Jay Wright and his recruiting and his coaches and how they've been able to get to a point where they have a guy like Brunson, have so much around him. Here's what's nuts about Jay Wright. Jalen Brunson's the National Player of the Year. He could have a subpar game tonight at point guard, and Villanova could still win by double digits because of how dangerous Omari Spellman, a stretch big, who's their most accurate three-point shooter, he could go off. Mikal Bridges, kind of a quiet game on Saturday. And to be honest, I think he's going to be pretty freaking good tonight. I think he's due for a fantastic performance. So when you have a player of the year at point guard, and he could have a subpar game, which isn't going to happen, but and you know that you can still beat arguably the other hottest team in the country over the past 5 weeks, it's incredible. Jay Wright, overall, if he does this, kind of a lingering thought, Jim, like, does he opt to say, you know what, this is where I want to be, I'm going to be at Villanova forever, I'm going to do, you know, just stick it out here, become the Mike Krzyzewski affiliate of this program, or will he have accomplished and done so much where, you know, this year, next year, will any NBA franchises come knocking on his door again and say, hey, listen, you're still young, you've done so well here, we love the stuff you run, do you want to give it a go at the NBA level? To me, that's a fascinating plot line moving forward, regardless of what happens.
I was going to say, Matt, it's rhetorical, certainly, but what do you think about that? I mean, yeah, I can't see him leaving the job that he has right now, not when he's looking at a second national championship in 3 years. I mean, for who? For what? For money, I guess, maybe, but there's got to be a higher calling. There's got to be a mission. Does he strike you as a guy that wants to test himself on the next level? Does he seem like a guy who might want to take a shot at the NBA?
I think that he definitely would be intrigued by that. I think Jay Wright is in an awesome position for himself in that he's got the ultimate job security. I mean, how many guys, Mike Krzyzewski, Roy Williams, John Calipari, maybe those are the three that have more job security at the college level than Jay Wright right now, and you might even be able to make a case that he's right there with Krzyzewski. But so does he want to do that, or does he want to say, you know what, like, why not? How many times in your life can you say you have an option if someone comes knocking to coach at the NBA level? College basketball would be bettered if you had a guy like Jay Wright. He's obviously very media savvy, and his programs have done so well. And it's huge for the Big East. You know, it's been a top three league. If you look at the metrics that track this kind of stuff, Jim, the Big East has adapted so well after college football forced conference realignment and the Big East into a 10-team league. It's huge for that league that Villanova has been as good as it has been. And he's established the program at the very top shelf in college basketball. If he wants to stay there and keep it like that, I think he would still find satisfaction in that. But there's no doubt about it. There are more challenges out there if he wants to take them. We'll have to wait and see.
Matt Norlander joining us for another moment or so. He is live in San Antonio gearing up for the championship game tonight. Matt, before you go, try and make an argument for Michigan. What does Michigan need to do in order to win tonight?
My argument for Michigan is this, and I was talking with the staff yesterday about this. So Loyola Chicago obviously is not, it's not a clone, pun intended, I guess, of Villanova, but it's similar. Pace and space, they pass the ball so well, they take good shots and they wait to take their good shots. Villanova, kind of Loyola on steroids a bit, and even Beilein was saying, listen, it was good that we faced Loyola because that was a great prep for Villanova. And Michigan held, again, they held them to 10 three-pointers, was able to make a run in the second half. So from a scheme and prep standpoint, at least Michigan has been in this mindset, and this quick turnaround isn't going to be a jolt to the senses just in terms of the stuff Villanova runs. And again, they only run about 5 or 6 sets, so they don't have a lot of homework, a lot of book cramming, so to speak. So if you want to make a case for Michigan, they'll have that ready, and they have Wagner. He's such a great player overall. I think that Charles Matthews athletically can match up with just about anyone on the floor for Villanova. That's an encouraging sign, and you have to believe, if you're a Michigan fan, that Xavier Simpson, who had a bad game on Saturday, he's not going to be that bad again. You're able to win if you're Michigan, despite the fact that he did not play well against Loyola Chicago. If he plays a little bit better, You've got the number three ranked defense in the country. You've got a shot. And this is the first time, Jim, just in terms of prepping for this game, the last time we had a top three team on offense play a top three team on defense, according to KenPom in the national title game, Michigan was involved. That was 2013, but it was a script flip. Back then, Michigan had the number one offense. Louisville had the number one defense. Defense won out in that game. We got to see if that'll happen tonight.
Clones, I want to talk to you about a brand new sponsor for our daily podcast. It's called Thrive Market. How would you like to shop for organic groceries without paying top dollar? You can bypass those overpriced local markets and shop at Thrive Market, a revolutionary online marketplace on a mission to make healthy living easy and affordable for everybody. Thrive Market is stocked with thousands of the best-selling non-GMO foods and natural products, always at 25 to 50% below traditional retail prices. They've got everything you need, whether your diet is paleo, gluten-free, vegan, kosher, plus personal care products, eco-friendly cleaning supplies, safe and non-toxic beauty products, organic baby food, kids products, and so much more. Click on a product and you'll see things like why you'll love it, price comparisons to retail, nutritional information, and more. You can shop knowing that you are getting the very best ingredients, the most affordable prices, and it's all safe for your family. Thrive Market's prices are already up to 50% off. And now they're giving you an extra $60 in free groceries plus free shipping. Get $60 of free organic groceries plus free shipping and a 30-day trial. Go to thrivemarket.com/Rome. ThriveMarket.com/Rome. Bryce, Aaron, Max, Harper. Now, there are a lot of things that you might call this guy. NL MVP, Silver Slugger, Home Run Champ, 5-time All-Star. That list goes on. There's also a list of things that you cannot call this guy. And some tool in Cincinnati found that out the hard way yesterday. Quick recap of Harper's day. Let's start in the sixth inning when he hit one near 400 feet to right center for his first bomb of the season. It gave the Nationals a 3-0 lead over the Reds, and it looked like it may have sealed the game for Washington. But Cincinnati did battle back. They get it to 5-3 in the top of the ninth. That's when Bryce Harper stepped to the plate. The at-bat went like this. Swinging strike, ball, swinging strike, ball, then bonehead.
Bryce Harper, 1-for-3 career with an RBI.
Bryce Harper, high in the air, deep center. See you later. A monster shot the other way. Second of the day in the year.
Did you hear the guy right before the pitch in the stand say overrated?
Overrate this.
425 to left center, Oppo. But again, as nice as that home run was, it's not about the home run. It is about something else. They touched on it, but did you catch what that was? Listen very carefully. Alvin, run that back, please.
Bryce Harper, 1-for-3 career with an RBI.
Bryce Harper, high in the air, deep center. See you later. A monster shot the other way.
Did you hear that? And I want to make this perfectly clear so I do not get any calls from guys who work at Radio Shack or Circuit City or CompUSA or Crazy Eddie's or The Wiz. We did not doctor that audio. This is not an April Fool's joke. That's not Alvin stepping into a studio, recording himself saying, overrated. And then splicing it into the highlights. Alvin has much better things to do with his time than mess with the audio of a Washington Nationals game in April. We all do. That's actual audio of some dope in Cincinnati shouting out to Bryce Harper that he's overrated. Overrated. And then Bryce Harper sending it over the wall. And the timing could not have been better. Check the timing on this.
Bryce Harper.
We did nothing to that audio. That was the sequence. The final syllable of overrated is barely out of that guy's mouth before you hear the crack of the bat. Overrated.
Bryce Harper.
Seriously, you may not like Bryce Harper. I'm not saying you have to like Bryce Harper. I'm not saying you're wrong if you don't like Bryce Harper. I'm not saying you have to cheer for Bryce Harper. But don't be an idiot. You can call this guy a lot of things, but overrated is not one of them. Who shouts overrated at a guy who homered three innings earlier? I mean, heckling is pretty tired in and of itself, but if you're going to heckle, be clever, be smart about it. And that's just not smart. In fact, that's the opposite of smart. That was the worst heckling since one Laker fan tried to get KG's attention back in the day.
Now it's still with that shoulder problem that he's had.
But he's screening better. See the full body contact, which makes Garnett shift, which gives him the chance to roll hard and get possession. He wasn't doing that in many of the previous games we've had. He's been slipping out early, which doesn't put the defense.
Steve Nash back in for Jordy Meeks last couple of days, and everybody's discussing him.
Finally, in the end, a couple of desperate Kevin!
Which doesn't put the
Shouting overrated at Bryce Harper is truly dumb. Shouting overrated at him and then having him go yard a split second later is pretty amazing. Almost as amazing as the tweet from the official Twitter feed of Dictionary.com. Even they jumped into the middle of this. Dictionary.com thumbed out the following. As any good Bryce Harper fan knows, the antonym of overrated is underestimated. Hashtag Nationals. Damn. Roasted. My man, you just got Twitter served by Dictionary.com. They just dropped an antonym on your head. How'd that feel? It's one thing for Bryce Harper to make you look stupid, but quite another for Dictionary.com to, quote, cause a painful loss of pride, self-respect, or dignity. Mortify. AKA the Dictionary.com's definition of humiliate. You just got roasted, bro. By both Harper and Dictionary.com. Why don't we just check with their partners in crime over at Thesaurus.com? Would you like a ointment for that injury caused by exposure to heat or flame, better known as a burn? Look, I'm not going to say that you cost your team the game yesterday, but screaming overrated at Bryce Harper and then having him homer certainly cost you your dignity, or at least it should have. Then again, you do something that dumb, and you probably think it is a good thing. Instead of being the worst day of your life, it might be your best. After all, you got what you wanted, the entire world to look at you. Well, they're looking at you and clowning you, but looking at you nonetheless. So don't ever do that again. And if you're going to, at least make sure there are more than 10 people in the ballpark when you do it. That way, nobody will hear it.
Bryce Harper.
Right on cue. Right on cue.
Overrate this.
You know, if I'm doing a positive take on the Nats, something incredible must have happened. If I'm doing a positive take on the Nats in April, well, it's not like there would ever be a positive take on the Nats in October. Something must have happened. That was almost as good as Kevin!
Which doesn't put the...
Man, this guy just sounds absolutely desperate, doesn't he? He's frantic.
Position.
He wants to tell Kevin the most important thing in the world. Like Kevin's house is on fire or Kevin's family's on fire. Kevin, listen to me!
Which doesn't
Kevin!
Put the contact, which position. He wasn't which gives him the chance to...
Like a Hall of Famer, like Kevin's going to turn around and look at this guy. Boogie might have, but not Kevin!
Which doesn't put the...
Clones. Here in Cali, we care about our rigs. We care about our whips. We care about how they look. You should as well. You know you have to keep that sled looking fresh. Like sports, car care is a game of numbers. And the best number for your car is 303 Automotive Premium Protectants and Cleaners, designed to clean, shine, and protect. 303 products, undergo rigorous testing and to ensure superior performance and outstanding protection and to bring out that show car finish. From your dashboard to your tires, 303 keeps your car looking new, longer. 303, we've got your number. For more information, visit my pals at 303radio.com. That's 303radio.com. Listen, I'll admit it. I'm a big car guy. I care how my car looks. That's why I entrust it to 303radio.com. Again, 303radio.com. My guest is Rick Welts. Rick, it is great to have you on the show. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jim. How are you?
Rick, I'm great. It's nice to visit with you. You've had a few days for it to sink in now, so let me first ask you, how does it feel to hear yourself introduced, Rick, as a member of the Basketball Hall of Fame?
Completely unreal. You know, people with my backgrounds don't usually end up anywhere close to this. Standing on the Alamo Dome floor Saturday night and looking to my right and seeing Jason Kidd, Steve Nash, Grant Hill, there was definitely a what-the-hell-am-I-doing-here moment, for sure.
That's great. That's awesome. Rick Welts joining us. You know, Rick, I had to actually cut your resume down a little bit for the introduction because your journey to this moment really is remarkable. I want to go back to the very beginning. When you were 16 and you were a ball boy for Seattle, what do you remember most about those days?
It's funny because it relates to the 2018 Hall of Fame class because one of the members of that class is Rod Thorne, and my first day at work at the Sonics in 1969, I met Rod Thorne. And what stands out to me most from that team is the three guys that went out of their way to be nice and inclusive of a punk 16-year-old kid were Rod Thorne, Lenny Wilkins, and also Tom Mascheri, and probably ended up being the three most successful people in the basketball field of that team. So maybe what goes around does come around.
Hall of Famer Rick Welts joining us. Also, somebody else, Bill Russell, was the head coach when you were with Seattle. And of all the people, Rick, that I've interviewed over the years, very few are as impressive to me as Bill Russell. What did you make of him when you were just 16?
Well, talk about intimidation.
Right.
He represented that in every way and form. I will tell you that during the second semifinal game when I was in the Alamo Dome Saturday night, my phone rang and it was Bill Russell. And his comment was, "What the hell has happened to the standards?"
Wow. So, that's great. That is
great. In his true outreach of love, that was Bill's comment.
Hey, Rick, I would say intimidation is a perfect word. I can honestly say in all the years I've done this, there have only been a few times where I sat down with somebody where I was truly intimidated, and Bill Russell was one of those guys to be certain. You know, Jay Lacob had made the point that when you were brought in, you brought a level of instant credibility to Golden State. And it's easy for some people to forget, Rick, but the Warriors have not always been this juggernaut. This was something that has required a lot of work on a lot of levels. So how would you describe where the organization was when you first arrived, and what were the priorities as you saw them?
Well, I think anybody, including you, been around the sport forever, looked at that franchise as one that if you ever got in the right ownership and management hands, it had every ingredient to be as successful as any team, not just in the NBA, but sports. The market, the companies that are based there, the incredible fan support for a team that missed the playoffs 16 out of 17 years before Joe and Peter bought the team. So all the ingredients were there. I really felt that it was a sleeping giant, and you know, nobody could have predicted the success on the court that we've had, but all the potential ingredients for success really were there.
We're talking to Rick Welts. He's the newest member of the Basketball Hall of Fame. It seems from the outside, it seems very evident that there is a very clear culture within that Golden State organization, something, Rick, that's embodied in the players, in the coaches, in the front office, and that it's something that's different from a lot of other professional sports organizations. How would you describe what that culture is?
Well, give Joe Lacob and Peter Guber credit here because they've hired people and let them do their jobs who have a vision of success that I think is very compatible. And the culture you're talking about, I think, is just the fact that we're all in every decision together. We love to argue. We love to express points of view. We love to try things, turn things upside down. But at the end of the day, when we come to a conclusion, like, it's full speed ahead. But I think there's a real selflessness around people like Steve Nash and Bob Myers that make all that work. You don't have kind of the egos that usually surround those jobs that sometimes get in the way of success. And we're you know, this is a moment for the Warriors right now. I hope we can keep it going.
Rick Welts joining us. Rick, as I mentioned off the very top, you spent 17 years with the league office, and there were a lot of moments that I could touch on there, from the development of the All-Star Weekend to the Dream Team to the launch of the WNBA. But you also played a major role in Magic Johnson's announcement that he had been diagnosed with HIV. What was your reaction when you first heard that news? And then how did you and David Stern go about approaching that announcement?
Well, it was David Stern, me, and about a hundred other people, it seemed. It's probably my proudest moment at the league because, for you know, we had a week's notice ahead of time that Magic was HIV positive, and we had an awful lot of homework to do. And you know, we brought in experts in every field that could help guide the direction of what a league should do when this happened and what the threat was or not of a player who is HIV positive taking the court and coming in contact with other players. But I think what made it work was Magic Johnson, right? If ever there was the right person cast for this role to change the dialogue on HIV around the world, not just in the NBA, you couldn't have cast a more worthy person than Magic Johnson. The grace that he showed through that is something that I think, when history is written, will be his most historic moment, and maybe the one he's credited with changing the world.
I was going to say, Rick, and in that moment then, did you have any idea at that time of the role that announcement and how it was handled by the league and Magic and what kind of an effect that would have on the public's awareness and understanding of HIV?
Well, none of us were, but what followed was dialogue that had never taken place before. I mean, a couple months later, Magic is doing a Nickelodeon special talking to kids with HIV, and I guarantee you HIV had never been said out loud on Nickelodeon prior to his announcement. So it brought to the forefront a problem that had been in many ways hidden, especially in the media up until that point. But all of a sudden, there was somebody that every one of us knew and loved who became the face of the cause, and he just has carried himself with such noble dignity every step of the way. The world has a real debt of gratitude to pay to Magic Johnson.
Hall of Famer Rick Welts joins us on the program this morning. Rick, in May of 2011, you publicly came out, and that was a watershed moment in sports. I know that you're never looking to make anything about yourself, but what kind of conversations were you having with people around you at that time, and then what kind of emotions did you have when you made that public?
Wow, Jim, big question. You know, in a nutshell, it was at a point in my life where I'd lost my father. My mother had been diagnosed with lung cancer. I'd spent my entire career separating my work life from my personal life. And it just, for me, felt like the right moment in time to bring those two things together. And I sought out the counsel of some really smart people because I wasn't in a place to really understand what the impact could or would be, and I could have taken care of it privately and accomplished the same thing personally, or perhaps I could do it a different way and do something more important. And after talking to a lot of people, I decided that I would give it a shot. And you know, little did I realize it would end up on the front page of the New York Times, but it changed my life, and I hope has been something other people who are in the same situation or kids could look at and say, I can really pursue in sports the thing that I love and be successful.
You know, Rick, I'd like to follow up on just one thing. I think that's really important what you just said. I mean, you've said that in the past also, that if you came out right now, you're not sure it would make news. But, Rick, I would argue the part of the reason that maybe it wouldn't make news is because you were willing to make news back then. So how much pride do you take in knowing that while the journey is not over and it's not easy, part of the reason might be now for younger people to be themselves is because of you?
Wow. Well, I'll let others judge that. But I will say the most gratifying outreach that I still get to this day is from parents or from kids themselves who kind of latch on to the story as a way to have the conversation that maybe they're having difficulty having. And, you know, parents just want their kids to be happy. And, you know, I hope, you know, the story has played a small role in more people feeling confident that they can be successful because of who they are, not in spite of who they are.
Yeah, I appreciate you sharing your thoughts on that, Rick. Before I let you go, let me ask you about Steve Kerr, because he wrote a letter for The Athletic about you on your induction to the Hall of Fame, and he wrote about how when he first met you, you were talking with him about becoming the general manager of the Suns. What do you remember about that particular meeting, and what was it that made you think that he'd be a good GM?
Well, I will tell you that I was holding it together pretty well, but I actually read that letter on the way to the NCAA games on Saturday night on the bus going there, and I kind of lost it because Steve's a really important person in my life, but I remember the meeting very much the day. I even know it was in a hotel in Cleveland, and I happened to be there, and he was doing a broadcast that night. And I just, you know, from a distance, been able to watch his career. He'd been involved in an ownership way with the Phoenix Suns and gotten to know him incredibly well, and had no idea eventually what kind of coach he would be, but I knew what kind of human being he was, and that kind of human being has a great opportunity to be successful in whatever they do.
Probably not a better break for me than the fact that April Fools went down on a Sunday. I can't tell you how pumped I was when I realized that I would not have to deal with a lot of you juveniles on a day that celebrates juveniles. And just so we're clear, it is towards the end of today's program, but April 1st did not jump the weekend to April 2nd. It does not work like that. It's called April Fool's Day, not April Fool's Day and tomorrow. So all of those stupid misleads that you've been working on over the entire weekend can stay right where they are, back in the weekend. Now, one that I will talk about, though, is that video going viral of Rams defensive end Aaron Donald training with what appear to be a couple of hunting knives. Now, you've probably seen this because it's pretty much everywhere. But this is what happens when there's a video of the best defensive player in the NFL, allegedly, working on getting off a block by fending off a couple of 6-inch blades. In the event that you have not seen this, AD is inside a practice facility. He's lined up with one hand in the ground. On the other side is some dude standing up holding a couple of huge buck knives. I mean, like, you want to say, what the hell is going on here? If you thought that James Harrison went hard, Aaron Donald is putting Harrison's workouts to shame. This guy is bringing potential homicide into his workouts. And no clones. Oge was not the dude on the other side holding the blades. Now, I'll be the first to admit it. The video in and of itself is a little weird. Like, why is there a guy trying to stab Aaron Donald as he works to get off a phantom block? Was Home Depot all out of brooms? I thought about that for a second. Maybe a second. And then my second thought, which I don't know why the rest of you didn't think this, was there's no way those knives are real. Those knives are fake, obviously, because of course they are. There's no way that any lucid person is messing around blocking trauma shots from a couple of hunting knives unless they're getting knived, unless they're getting mugged, unless there's some kind of pathological homicidal maniac standing in front of them, unless there's a murderer in front of them, unless OJ is standing in front of them. They're not. But naturally, the internet saw it, and then the internet lost its collective bleep. Because nobody stopped to think, one, it's literally the most dangerous drill ever for absolutely no reason whatsoever. And number two, almost as importantly, it is April Fool's Day. So run this guy's name through Twitter right now, and you will see a bunch of verified accounts with a fishhook running right through their bottom lip, including SportsCenter. SportsCenter got hooked, as well as a number of other blue checkers on Twitter. Bros, I mean, I hate to be that guy, but come on. How did anybody see that and not think that those knives were fake? In fact, I won't be that guy. I'm not going to be the guy to say that. I'll let Aaron Donald be the guy to say that. Because after everybody was tripping, he finally got around to tweeting, and I quote, "The knives ain't real." Yeah, spoiler alert, the four-time Pro Bowler and reigning Defensive Player of the Year, who is still waiting on that well-deserved 8-digit payday, ain't thwarting off knives. You can't believe that, right? Can't believe a guy who's about to break the bank didn't want to show up to OTAs with three fingers and a bunch of stab wounds. You know, again, the obvious question, why would you train with fake knives? Why? Because of this. He knew he'd hook a million suckers who believe anything they see. If it's on the internet, it must be true. If there's video, it must be true. There's video, it must be true. Now, give the guy this. As far as April Fool's video goes, that's pretty epic, considering how many people took the bait. And even though it was far less believable than Anthony Davis waxing the brow and chopping it in two. The acting was pretty good. And obviously he sold it to a number of people. Look, I'm not saying I haven't been hooked. Far from it. I'm not saying that I have not been hooked. I mean, sure, Manti Te'o hooked me pretty badly. I had Manti Te'o on this show. I interviewed Manti Te'o. I bought it. I thought it was the best story ever. So I've been hooked. But then again, Manti didn't hook me. He himself was the catfish for the ages. Except, well, Manti did not hook me and I got hooked. Donald did not hook me. Because why the hell would he do something like that? Why would he do something like that? The answer is he wouldn't, of course. How the hell could you not know that? So the next time you see an NFLer who's about to break the bank, one of the best in the game, training with machetes or live hand grenades, just do what you should have done when you saw it the first time. Call bullcrap and just keep moving. Because while everybody is looking for an edge, nobody is looking to bleed out during an out-of-season drill designed to fend off a block, especially when it happens on April 1st. This guy's laughing at all the suckas that he hooked. This guy's training with real knives. Because if you can do that outside the game, think how much easier the game would be. Yet not if you get stabbed in the lung, it won't. Not if they find one of your arteries, it won't. Yeah, I understand that you want to train differently. I understand that you're looking for an edge, but nobody's looking to train with knives. Why not do it with baseball bats? Dude got over. Got over on lots of people and got over on lots of respectable people. Tony Loughman is my guest. Tony, what's going on, brother? How are you?
I am wonderful, Rome. Great to be with you, and thank you for that introduction. I am, in fact, a massive fan of the program, which is why I was so upset when Dave Whalen reached out to me yesterday and had the audacity to question my level of interest in joining the show. The answer is always yes. Never a question at all. 100% yes. I'd lay down in traffic for him and or you.
You know, bro, I appreciate that. But he knew that. He was just trying to be polite. Don't read into it, man. You're all good. Tony Loughman joining us. I appreciate the sentiment very much, man. You know that. Listen, you and I have been talking. Well, actually, I've been talking all season long, and I want to get your thoughts on this about the Vegas Golden Knights, Tony. I mean, they're not just a good team. They won the Pacific Division. What do you make of how they've played in their first year in the NHL?
It's truly historic, and it's so exciting because, and I give credit to the commissioner of the National Hockey League. It was Gary Bettman who said in an event that I was fortunate enough to MC that it is a genuine love affair between that community and that team. We all remember the terrible tragedy in October. The way that that team has given that community a chance to heal, and the hockey part of it is off the charts amazing, truly historic. Their inaugural season is the best inaugural season for any expansion team in any North American sport. You mentioned them winning the Pacific Division, and all of that is remarkable. I think about the accomplishments of William Karlsson. He's one of the best stories in the whole league this year. He had 6 goals last year for the Columbus Blue Jackets. This year, 42 goals, and he's one of a number of guys that have gone there and made the most of the opportunity. One of the most fascinating stories in our league this year, without a doubt.
Tony Loughman joining us. You know, you mentioned the love affair between the town and that team. Whenever I've had a player or a coach from the Golden Knights on the show, they always end up talking about that fan base in Las Vegas. Now, the city has embraced that team the way they have. I mean, in your wildest dreams, did you ever think that there would be that kind of passion for the Golden Knights so quickly? And how do you explain it?
Well, I do think that it makes a lot of sense because Las Vegas is a town that loves entertainment and hockey is a very entertaining sport. And the fans that really get the game appreciate it. They did a lot of thorough research into whether that city could be viable for a professional sports franchise. And not only now are the Golden Knights there, but we know the Raiders are going there. I'm not surprised at all about the passion. What does surprise me is how competitive that team has been from the very start. And what an amazing home ice advantage. People joke around about the Vegas flu, that teams go there and they don't play as well. Their home results have not been as good over the last month or so, but over the course of this season, truly historic how good they've been in their own barn. And I think that's going to be interesting and important to watch come playoff time, where you know home ice advantage can be a significant difference maker. I want to see how well they can do with the pressure-packed Stanley Cup playoffs looming.
Tony Loughman joining us. All right, let me ask you about Nashville. The Preds lead the league in points right now. They came very close to winning it all last year when they went into the postseason with the fewest points of anybody. Now, you are not just a hockey guy. You can span the world of sports. If the Preds were to win a Stanley Cup, where would that rank in great sports-related accomplishments for the city of Nashville?
Rome, we cannot discuss the city of Nashville without first paying tribute to the great JD. His first phone call to the jungle, unforgettable. But having said that, this team could eclipse his place in the civic pride category when it comes to Nashville. You mentioned they did almost win the cup last year. They go to six games in the Stanley Cup final, lose the back-to-back champion Penguins. But they were the last team in. It was like a Cinderella story. This year, they are an absolute juggernaut. Incredible. You pointed out where they are in the standings. This team is so deep. Their general manager, David Poile, is the winningest GM in NHL history. And I think this is one of the most impressive jobs he's ever done, putting together a team that really has no weaknesses. And in goal, Pekka Rinne, one of the great human interest stories in our league. This guy should win the Vezina. He was picked in the eighth round, Rome, in the 2004 draft. We don't even have eight rounds anymore. This guy is everything that's good about the game, a total gentleman, and he's been unreal between the pipes.
Tony Loughman flexing his jungle muscle. He mentioned JD in Nashville. For those of you who do not know what he's talking about this call. JD, you're up. Nice to have you. How are you?
Shimon, I'm calling you. Pimp in the box. What's up, Jay Stu? Yeah, the porn stash rocks. Shimon, come to my room. Up to my dorm.
I'm trying to think of what year that was. Alvy, is there a year on that? 2007.
It's amazing.
Is that great, Tony? That's what Tony Loughman's talking about. Wait for it. And Tony, I love the way when I'm like, JD, what's up? He didn't even acknowledge me. He just went right into Shamone. How good is that? Tony Loughman joining us. I'm glad you reset that. Hey, let me ask you, when you talk about human interest stories in the NHL, as good as the games have been lately, I'd be hard-pressed to come up with a better moment than 36-year-old accountant Scott Foster stepping in as Chicago's emergency goaltender and making seven saves, and the crowd was chanting his name. What did you make of that scene?
I have goosebumps you just mentioning it. One of the real thrills of doing the job that I do is I work alongside Kevin Weeks, and that night it was him and I at the desk. This is a guy who played over a decade in the league, second-round draft pick, total pro. He's the head of the goalie union. Seeing his level of enthusiasm as that story unfolded live, yes, as you point out, Foster goes in, makes seven saves. He was remarkably poised, considering the guy had worked 9 to 5 that day as an accountant. He comes in with 14 minutes left. The Winnipeg Jets are a potent offensive team. He made a save on Patrick Laine, who's a 40-goal scorer this year. He had 36 last year. He made a save on Paul Stastny, who's a U.S. Olympian. It was not just that he went in the game, not just that they won the game. It was that he was very, very good. And Hawks fans, we all know how passionate a sports town Chicago is. We're amazing. Chanting his name, he's the first star. It felt like a Disney movie, to use a Romism. It was really a Disney movie ending. I was so proud of the sport and so happy for that guy. What a story.
All right, Tony, before you go, I mentioned off the very top, you were a key member of the UCLA basketball program. In fact, tomorrow will be the 23rd anniversary of you and Ed O'Bannon combining for a monster game in the win over Corliss Williamson, Scotty Thurman, and the Arkansas Razorbacks. What do you remember most about that game and your contributions to that championship?
I appreciate you remembering that, and I'm very flattered. Ed and that team, one of the great experiences of my life. My most vivid memory was actually getting on the bus. Coach Eric always told us, be on time when time is involved. So I was early to the bus, but I was not earlier than Ed O'Bannon. I go up the steps, I turn left. He's sitting in the back row, and we were wearing our gold warm-ups. We were the higher-seated team, and his face was illuminated just by the warm-up. It was dark because it's Seattle, you know. But I remember thinking at that moment, we are going to win the national championship. He looked like Braveheart, minus the face paint. I was so certain he would not let us lose, and he didn't. 30-17, one of my favorite sports moments ever, and thank you for remembering it.
Tony Loughman, right in the middle of that whole thing. Remember, you can watch him after the game and throughout the NHL playoffs on NHL Tonight. Visit NHLNetwork.com for your local channel listings. Caps at Blues tonight, 8 p.m. Eastern. Tony, great job. Always good to have you in the jungle. I appreciate you. Great to see you just killing it and doing so well. I'm proud of you, and we'll do it again soon for sure.
My pleasure. Thanks so much, Jim.
Mark, what's going on? How you feeling?
Jimmy, happy Championship Monday, man.
You too.
I hope tonight's game can match last night's final, chock full of sweet wrong-footed layups and shot-put-looking three-pointers. Hopefully people other than parents and extended family will tune in tonight. Speaking of girls' realm, Mark in Hollywood has been chirping me hard on Twitter about tonight's matchup and about how he's going to call and, quote, destroy me if Michigan doesn't win tonight. And because I live rent-free inside that giant forehead of his, I figured I'd call in beforehand and dispel any rumors about Mark's allegiances, since they seem to change as often as Drake changes jerseys. Mark, just because you live in West Philadelphia, born and raised, got your ass kicked by a couple of bullies, and then moved in with your auntie and uncle in Bel Air, doesn't mean you get to peacock every time something good happens in that urine-stenched hellhole you were born in. Bro, I have a Michigan tattoo on my arm. You probably have a fill-in-the-blank tattoo. So go ahead and grab that magic marker you've been sniffing all weekend, right in Villanova, because I guess regional pride is now a thing when you're a fan. Jim, Mark claims any regional success, Eagles Super Bowl, Steelers Super Bowl, Penn State NIT. He's even such a fan of Earth, he remains unemployed so he doesn't have to give off harmful admissions driving to work every day. Mark, that was super cool how you won those last two smack-offs because you live in California. Your only one shining moment was when you chose the extra glossy finish on your headshot, dude. Jim, I saw a picture of this guy's headshot. Head is still around. My first thought was, let's play some basketball. Round and round, round it goes. And for an April Fool's joke yesterday, Mark told his parents he no longer needs to use their gas card. He's got one of those split jerseys that's half Penn State, half Villanova, like when Archie Manning would attend the Giants-Colts game. You probably also tout your big submission of the day on Taz and the Moose, Mark. Jim, if Mark does respond today, he will definitely wait until hour number three. That's the only time we're going to see this dude on TV for the next couple of years. Go boo!
Against my better judgment, I'll go ahead and rack him. Mark in Boston, see you in the smack-off, Mark, whenever it is this year.
Good night now!